You are Locked On Mizzou, your daily podcast on the Missouri Tigers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, all you true sons and daughters, I'm John Miller, your Mizzou mafioso and central scrutinizer of Missouri Tigers football and basketball 5 days a week. And today's episode of Locked On Mizzou is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. And this morning, I had analyzed two of Kentucky's victories, at least from a statistical standpoint, just from afar. But you know what? I wanted to go back and really look at a close game with the Wildcats. So I thought, why not watch every snap of their overtime loss to Ole Miss? And I've got a lot of thoughts to break down from that particular game, including what I think maybe the Missouri game plan should look like on Saturday. But first, let's talk about some breaking news, and that is Tyler Macon, Missouri quarterback, future Missouri quarterback, hopefully, let's put it that way, commitment from East St. Louis, is officially going to enroll early in January. So good for him. Once again, saw some really short footage of him throwing the football at an elite camp, and man, there's just something about the way that kid throws, accurate to all levels, it seems, of the field. I'm excited about him. Certainly really excited about Connor Bazelak, too, but by golly, it's always good to have more than one quarterback, am I right? And also, before we get to Kentucky once again, let's put that LSU game probably to bed now at this point with one final bit of information and analysis. Ryan Walters, the Missouri defensive coordinator, broke down that famous goal line stand, that now famous goal line stand by the Tigers against the LSU Tigers. And I thought Ryan had some really excellent analysis here. And he went really, really in-depth. I've got a really long quote sitting here in front of me, so I'm not going to read you the entire thing because, well, frankly, that would be terrible podcasting. So I'll just tell you, give you the Cliff's notes and a little bit of analysis as well. Now, we touched on the decision by Eli Drinkwitz to not call timeout during that sequence in order to possibly give Missouri's offense a chance if LSU were to have scored in that situation. But Walter said he and Drinkwitz were on the headset, and Drinkwitz actually asked Walters if he wanted a timeout, and Ryan said, no, we're perfect. Because he felt like because LSU is in their 11 personnel, meaning one running back, one tight end, and three receivers, he felt comfortable that he knew what types of plays that LSU tends to run from that personnel, especially around the goal line. So basically, Coach Walters didn't want to give LSU any time to possibly substitute or regroup, get into a different personnel grouping that maybe Ryan didn't have as much of a feel for. That just shows how much tendencies go into play calling and decision making. And frankly, again, something I've focused on a lot here lately, how much context goes into each and every decision that happens in a football game. And because the LSU Tigers did not change from that 11 personnel on any of those four downs, Ryan Walters didn't change his call either. He had an aggressive man-to-man defense, brought some extra pressure, as you would expect in the red zone, right? We talk a lot about how Ryan runs a lot of single high safety. Well, you'll see Kentucky's probably going to run a lot of double high safety, two guys deep. But of course, any team around the red zone isn't going to have any safeties deep. No, those guys are going to be extra defenders in the passing game, extra rushers, whatever it might be. Certainly, this was not the exception, is what I'm trying to say. Now, on third down, Ryan Walters actually pointed out that Josh Bledsoe got picked on, and the LSU receiver got wide open on the player, pretty open, let's put it that way. But again, getting back to tendencies, coaches aren't the only ones who are aware of tendencies. The players are too, especially smart ones like Nick Bolton. And he knew that there was a good chance that Miles Brennan was going to throw that ball to the outside in the flat, and quickly too. So he timed it perfectly and batted that pass down and frankly, probably saved the game, quite honestly, on third down there. But then, of course, Bledsoe, fourth down. As Ryan says, he's guarding with inside leverage. He says he was guarding with inside leverage, obviously, when you're bringing the house, but feeling the roll to his outside, Bledsoe put his foot in the ground, was able to get downhill. Now, what's interesting there to me is he says he was guarding inside leverage, obviously. Now, what does that mean? If maybe that is obvious to all of you, but it probably isn't, quite frankly. Well, again, what did I say? On every down, Missouri was playing man-to-man, and they were bringing extra pressure. Well, what happens when you basically bring a zero blitz? And a zero blitz meaning no safety help. Again, you don't need the safety help in the red zone, but just to give you a visualization of what's happening. Obviously, in that scenario, the middle of the field is going to be wide open. So that's why it's obvious that Josh Bledsoe had inside leverage, because you want to force that pass to the outside. It's just a lower percentage play. So that's just smart, really basic fundamental football. So just a really interesting sort of peek behind the curtain, I thought there. Ryan Walters taking us through, he and Coach Drinkwitz's thought process there on that goal line stand. And really interesting stuff, and well done by the staff, obviously. And to finish off his quote, Walters says, "That was a good exclamation point on the game, really happy for the kids and really happy for Coach Drink and his first victory here at Faro. That was probably the biggest win I've had here in my career, for sure." And I don't know about Ryan Walters, but if I had had a gigantic victory like that, well, there's really only one way to celebrate, and that's to celebrate responsibly with a cold, refreshing Coors Light. Do you ever feel like you're always on in this modern day society that we've crafted for ourselves? Well, again, I'm sure Ryan Walters is always on, and certainly Eli is as well. These days, everything is go, go, go. You're on your phone constantly. There's never an excuse to not be at work. Heck, even our family and friends these days, with a bajillion different pressing issues, are expecting us also to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to take a moment, turn off, and hit that reset button. Well, that's when you should reach for Coors Light, the beverage that's made to chill. And best of all, you can get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com. Again, that's get.coorslight.com. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. But of course, these darn devices also have their upsides too, don't they? Not only can you get cold Coors Light delivered to your door, but of course, you can also get all the auto parts you could ever possibly imagine from rockauto.com. And rockauto.com has been around, well, frankly, about as long as the internet itself, because rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even a new carpet for your interior. Whether it's your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And please write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Well, yesterday on the show, Eli Drinkwitz had a quote about the game knows. Basically, he was saying it was his version of "ball don't lie," the famous Rasheed Wallace quote from basketball. Basically, it was about karma. Essentially, if you do the right things, eventually, over the long term, the game will reward you for doing so. Well, on the first play of the Kentucky-Ole Miss game for the Wildcats, their first offensive snap, a beautiful run by Asim Rose Jr. Well, so beautiful, in fact, that at about the 20-yard line, he gained 72 here. He started putting up the peace sign, a la Tyreek Hill, in very much satisfying fashion, he was tackled at the 3-yard line. pointing at the stands while he was doing it to possibly his girlfriend. I'm not quite sure. But I laughed quite heartily at that. Yeah, buddy, don't do that. That's my advice. By the way, then, on second goal after a second goal run where he's stuffed, he actually puked before the next staff. He puked. My goodness. Then on third down, they go wildcat, snap it directly to the kid, and he loses the fumble at the 1 yard line with Kentucky already down 7-0. Karma much? Yeah, that's where I think the game knows. Yeah, I think that's where that came into an effect. But ultimately, though, Kentucky did hold Ole Miss on their next series at their own 1 yard line to a 3-and-out. And Kentucky scored pretty quickly on their subsequent drive, so ultimately it didn't actually cost the Wildcats a whole lot. But really, in the first half of this football game, especially the first quarter, the Kentucky offensive and defensive lines really dominated the football game. Especially their running game was wildly effective. And really, the front four for Kentucky on defense was getting pressure and without blitzing, too. Again, they played, I alluded to this a little earlier, Kentucky tends to play a pretty soft defense because they are able to get pressure with their front four. Two safeties deep, a lot of zone defense, that kind of deal. And ultimately, the Wildcats in this first half would ride a lot of runs on first and second downs, the occasional play-action fake to a tight end over the middle of the field, and the occasional wide receiver screen. That's basically what their offense is. You know, some of those wide receiver screens were definitely effective, especially to Josh Ali. He's by far their best receiver. I don't know who else I can trust for them, quite honestly. So it'll be interesting to see how much attention Mr. Ali receives on Saturday. But it also struck me, for as much as Kentucky uses misdirection in its run game, especially some counter Trey type plays where the tight end comes across the formation to block, I never noticed them throw a screen pass to a running back. Again, especially considering how many good runners they seem to have between Chris Rodriguez Jr., Asim Rose, and Courvoisier Smoke. And my God, what a name that is. Another strength for Kentucky is definitely their punter. And I thought it was interesting to see that he was often doing the rugby style roll out as a punter and then roll it on the ground style kicking that seemingly was really popular there for a few years, but has kind of gone away a little bit, which has always surprised me. I've always felt that was a pretty effective strategy, especially if you don't have the world's greatest punter. But obviously, in terms of effectiveness, it's really working for Kentucky. But interestingly, this may actually play into Missouri's hands a tiny bit, because as I've said, I want Missouri, well, you always want a team to play a clean game. I think it's even more important than usual that Missouri plays as much of a turnover-free game as possible. Well, if Kentucky's going to rugby-style punt it every time, well, guess what? Missouri's had a lot of trouble securing punts lately this season. So if we don't have to catch them, that may actually be not the worst thing in the world for the Tigers. But on the first drive of the second half, Kentucky completely dominated Ole Miss to take a 28-14 lead early in that second half. They did basically whatever they wanted there. But yet, if you follow college football closely, you know that Kentucky did not win this game. So what happened? Were there some tendencies that Ole Miss may have picked up on as the game went along? I believe there were, and I'm going to tell you what those tendencies were right after this quick break. Well, in the spirit of Ryan Walters being comfortable with his calls at the end of that LSU game because of personnel tendencies, I think Kentucky had some pretty obvious tendencies that while they executed really well, I think they're really predictable at the same time. You can tell most of their formations are designed to run the football. And off of those formations, if they pass it, it's almost always going to be some sort of quick play, play action, over the middle to a tight end, or a wide receiver screen. And occasionally, probably their most effective play down the field is Terry Wilson will roll out to his right sometimes and find a guy 15 yards downfield on an out route. Again, usually Josh Ali. But other than that, Kentucky doesn't have a whole lot to offer if you get them off schedule. If you get them, if you can somehow get them to get into a sack, lose some yardage on a running play, draw a holding penalty, anything like that, well, Terry Wilson is not comfortable in the pocket. I can promise you that. If he doesn't see his first read, he's going to flush every single time. So, again, maybe just double up on Josh Ali on 3rd and 10, and you might get off the field every time, from what I've seen. The one formation where you can almost always guarantee a Kentucky pass, from what I saw, is, again, formation and 11 personnel, but with three receivers to the right. If Kentucky ever has trips, and they're in shotgun, three receivers to either side of the field, and with one running back there with Terry Wilson, well, that's a pass almost every time. And Kentucky also ran quads. Well, I guess this is kind of a semi-gridiron glossary now, isn't it? Well, if trips is three receivers to one side of the field, well, what would quads be? You guessed it, that's right, four receivers to one side of the field. Well, every single time Kentucky used quads, that was a running play. And it was either an inside zone or a zone read keeper by the quarterback. Either way, they were basically running away from the quads. They're basically trying to put all your defenders to one side, and they're running away from you. And one time, Terry Wilson ran for a 10-yard touchdown from that formation. So just something to watch there. If you ever notice Kentucky running quads, it's almost certainly a run away from that side of the field. Now, one thing that I really noticed as this game went along, again, Kentucky had a 2-touchdown lead early in the second half, but as the second half continued to go along here, Ole Miss, the tempo that they played with, their offense, which is relentless. I mean, they're Josh Heupel adjacent for sure, trying to snap the ball every 15 seconds or so, I would say, with a good 20 seconds left on the play clock. The amount of stress and just the amount of fatigue that was causing the Kentucky defensive line, to me, really showed up in that second half, because Kentucky was getting good pressure by their front four in the first half. But again, as the game went along, those guys were clearly gassed. And I don't know how much they were able to substitute there. I don't know if maybe the second string that they do sub in and out, maybe they're just not as effective as the first. But to me, it looked like Kentucky wasn't substituting a lot, and their guys were just simply getting gassed. And I also mentioned that Kentucky is fairly vanilla with their defense. They kind of do what they do, to steal an old Gary Pinkel phrase. They typically rush four, play a zone defense, and try to just let their guys, frankly, not have to think a whole lot, it seems. And there's a lot that may sound insulting. I actually don't mean it to be. There's a lot to be said for just knowing how to play your assignment, knowing every single in and out of what you need to do on a particular defense from your base defense. But the problem with that is, again, as the game went along, it sure seemed like Lane Kiffin and his staff at Ole Miss were eventually able to find holes and to find weakness in that Kentucky defense. Now, again, how much of that is to do with the fatigue of that defense, especially the defensive line and X's and O's? Well, I think it was a little of both, quite honestly. One thing, when Ole Miss would empty out the formation, just in terms of coverage, suddenly the middle of the field was absolutely wide open, and you could just hit easy crossing routes basically whenever you wanted. I was almost surprised that Ole Miss didn't go with more empty formations, considering the effectiveness of it that I saw. Now, in short yardage and in red zone, that's where Kentucky's offense really shines. That red zone offense, they are tough to get off the field because, again, they're going to stress you at multiple points. They have multiple backs that can carry the ball. They can do it by running straight at you. They can do it with misdirection. And they can even do it out of, well, pardon the pun here, the wildcat formation, where they have a direct snap to a running back. Now, typically, when they get up to the line of scrimmage, they're not going to immediately show that. What happens is they'll show a regular formation, and then Terry Wilson, the quarterback, will go out in motion as a receiver. But what Ole Miss did every single time, I noticed, they completely ignored Wilson as a receiver. And guess what? The guy who took the direct snap for the Wildcats, well, he ignored him too. He just ran the ball and never looked over there. So it'll be interesting to see if the Tigers choose to ignore Wilson on the outside. Frankly, I think I would. I think I force a running back to throw the ball in that situation. I force a quarterback to actually catch it. Because if you're able to bring that extra defender, hopefully it's not exactly going to be an easy throw for the kid either. So just another thing to keep an eye on. If they do go Wildcat, how does Missouri deal with Wilson out there? And does Kentucky just ignore him as a receiver? But obviously, at the end of the day, Ole Miss able to rally. They tie the game at the end of regulation. Their first possession, Kentucky does score a touchdown from that quads play, actually, that I was mentioning earlier, Terry Wilson from 10 yards out. But they miss the extra point. So when Kelvin Joseph commits a pass interference for Kentucky by not looking back, well, that put the ball on the 2-yard line. Ole Miss gets it in. They make the extra point and win 42-41. Mark Stoops, the Kentucky coach, was running after the officials after the game, and boy, that was a tough look because that was a clear pass interference on Kelvin Joseph. Frankly, not that great of a day for him either. I wasn't all that impressed, and he supposedly is their best corner. So to me, I think if you're Missouri, I might strongly consider on my first drive doing a lot of empty formations just to try to figure out where the holes are in that Kentucky zone. And well, if Missouri's able to block that front four, if they're able to give Connor some time, I think we should be in pretty good shape offensively. I really do. Honestly, I'm much more worried about the other side of the ball. I'm worried that Kentucky is going to run all over Missouri. I really am, because that offense, it has its limitations for sure. Terry Wilson is definitely a limited player. If you can get that offense into a 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10, or obviously longer, then you're in great shape. But the problem is that's easier said than done. This is a fundamentally sound football team that knows how to grind it out. They have an offensive line that loves to run that football. But the one thing is, I didn't see a whole lot of deep shots out of this offense. I'd be much more worried if they had hit some deep shots, or really even attempted maybe but one. Ryan Walters is certainly not afraid to play an aggressive defense. It'll just be interesting to see if he has some well-timed blitzes by, say, like a cornerback, something like that. He can maybe disrupt some of that read game by Terry Wilson and his backs that can get Missouri off the field, because, frankly, Mizzou doesn't have to absolutely stifle the Kentucky offense. And frankly, in the run game, they probably won't. But if they can just somehow get a couple turnovers, get a couple penalties, a couple sacks that can stop drives, that's really all they need. Because in spite of the fact that Kentucky rushed for 408 total yards in that football game against the Ole Miss Rebels, well, it wasn't enough. They lost anyway. And certainly we know Ole Miss has got a high-powered offense, but you know, a lot of that stuff that they run is pretty simple. It really is. So I think actually Eli Drinkwitz is even more varied in the kind of stuff that he can do, and I think Bazalek is a much more advanced quarterback than Matt Corral, for instance. So after watching this game, I still feel pretty good about Missouri taking the points. Anything over 3, I think it's at 6 last I saw. Certainly take the 6 if you're a Tiger fan. And you know what? I usually go with unders, but this is a low number because of this Kentucky defense. I'm almost starting to the over is starting to get a little bit tasty to me. So you know what? We'll officially give our picks on that tomorrow with Blake, a part of Project Run Play. See you then, Friday, right here on Locked On Mizzou.